I had this thought. As soon as we read that line, I thought Emily Williams in my head. And as if by the power of manifesting reality before you, who walked in our door right then? Emily Williams. And you know what the first thing she did? First thing she did, she stood there and she started dancing right away. As if made manifest. Now, if you're wondering where she got it from, let me tell you what happened on December 27th at Margaret's birthday party. They did this whole big announcement for Margaret, and Margaret came walking out with music blaring. That 90-year-old woman was dancing all around the front of the stage. It was fantastic. I'm so glad you're both here today. And thank you for being the bodies of dance in our congregation among us liturgically challenged Church of Christ people. After our sermon today, we're going to do something that Dan Dickinson asked me many, many times to do, and I regret that we had never done it. And so we're going to try it today, and we'll try it for a month and see how it goes, see what we think of it. Dan used to say, you know, we say a lot of words during the sermon. I don't think he meant it as a put down, but he said, you know, we say a lot of words for 20 minutes straight, 15 minutes, whatever. We say a lot of words, and then we go straight into more words by singing a song right away without a breath to pause and receive. And he said, couldn't we take 60 seconds of silence after the sermon just to sort of like pause for a second and then go and sing together? And I said yes, and we never did it. And so today we're going to try and do that. So after the sermon today, Ryan and the crew will hold off for 60 seconds. We'll just have a moment of silence after these words, and then we'll return back to song. And for those of you who are wondering, like Nolan, yes, I did cut my sermon just a little bit to make space for the extra time of silence. There you go. Because I know he'll be keeping track. Okay. So John writes, the Word became flesh and lived among us. This past summer, while traveling around Utah and northern Arizona, Lisa and I had occasion to visit a few laundromats along the way. At one of these stops, I'm pretty sure it was the Grand Canyon, we happened to be doing laundry just after sunrise on a Sunday morning. Now, to be clear, we were not there because we love laundromats. No one loves laundromats. In fact, we had been dreading doing the laundry and had been putting it off and putting it off. But as it turns out, clean clothes do not magically appear if you just keep ignoring them. And so we went early and we groaned about it the whole way there. Like other laundromats we experienced this past summer, this place smelled of detergent and resignation. The fluorescent lights in those places, like always, buzzed as if they were barely sort of holding on. Every plastic chair, do you resonate with this, had this mysterious crack in it somewhere. There was a TV bolted to the wall playing something that nobody was watching. And along with Lisa and me, there was only one other person in the park's laundromat, a woman, I'm guessing in her mid to late 50s, folding socks. And there was absolutely nothing remarkable about the scene. Just this woman folding socks slowly and carefully, apparently for a large number of family members. Matching pairs like this was the most important task in the universe. And although I can't tell you exactly why, perhaps because it was a Sunday, perhaps because I'm a preacher, I don't know, but I found myself wondering, as I watched this woman, why does this feel holy? Which is, of course, ridiculous. Because it's a laundromat at the very crack of dawn with buzzing lights and a broken change machine. Well, whatever the reason for my musings, that moment came back to me this week as I read John 1. And I'd like to return to it in just a moment. But first, there's this. In the beginning, John tells us, was the Word. Unlike Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John begins at full volume for us. He doesn't warm us up. He doesn't say, once upon a time. He says, before time itself, before dirt, before stars, before socks, there was the Word. And the Word wasn't lonely. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Everything came into being through this world. Galaxy, gravity, bacteria, bananas, the whole thing came into being. And this is big. This is cosmic sort of language. This is John saying, I'm about to talk about God, so buckle up. And honestly, and rightly so, we love this part. This is the part we frame, the part we embroider on banners, the part that sounds impressive and mysterious and important. But John doesn't stay there. Because just when we start nodding along with all these high concepts, yes, yes, very profound, John drops the theological equivalent of a bowling ball. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. Not visited, not appeared briefly, lived among us. The eternal Word took on a body, a real one with sweat glands and digestion and probably a weird laugh like everyone seems to have, because God decided to experience life from the inside, which is, of course, shocking, except for the fact that we've heard it so many times, I think it's fair to say it's lost its edge for most of us. So let me put it this way. God chose to show up where people do their laundry. The Word didn't become an idea. The Word didn't become a philosophy. It didn't become a nicely organized belief system. The Word became flesh. God chose to need food, rest, companionship, and the need to do laundry. God even chose to smell like a human, if you can get your mind around that. Bad morning breath and all. But given all that, here's where we usually go next. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overtake it, which is, of course, true and important and inspires good talk about hope and salvation and belief, and all of these things are very good things. But here's what I wonder. I wonder if the progression and then returning back to the light, I wonder if reading it like that with all the best of intentions has actually caused us to read this passage somewhat backwards. That is, what if John is not building towards some grand spiritual abstraction, but rather building towards something embarrassingly ordinary? Which brings me back to the laundromat. The woman, folding socks, finished her pile, and, somewhat embarrassed to say, noticed I was staring, not in a creepy way, just in a, why does this feel important way? Fortunately, this woman was one of those people who laughs easily, and without missing a beat, when she noticed I was staring at what she was doing, she said, you'd think after all these years, socks would learn to pair themselves, which I thought was perfect. I was grateful for the joke. I was grateful for her kindness. She and Lisa and I talked for maybe 2 minutes about nothing, about the park and the heat, about how dryers eat socks like it's their job. Then she picked up her laundry bag and left. And that was it. here's the thing. For some reason, I remember that moment more clearly than a lot of sermons I've heard, not to mention given, which makes me wonder. John says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overtake it. But notice what John does not say. He doesn't say the darkness recognized the light. He doesn't say the darkness applauded the light. He doesn't say the darkness even noticed the light. Light just shows up. And for some, suddenly, things are visible. At least, sometimes. He was in the world, John says. The world that came into being through him, yet the world knew him not. When you imagine God sitting in a laundromat, being mistaken for just another tired person hoping the sock monster doesn't eat their laundry, that line, the world knew him not, all of a sudden hits a bit harder. Because now it sounds like what the light reveals and what we often miss is God with quarters in God's pockets. God waiting for the spin cycle. God sitting in a plastic blue chair with a crack in it. And John keeps pushing us. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. Not because they were evil villains, but because he didn't look like what they were expecting. They were looking for fireworks, and God showed up as flesh. They were looking for power, and God showed up folding socks. We often read John 1 as a story about recognizing Jesus, which is no doubt right. But what if it's also a story about misrecognizing God? What if John is saying the problem isn't that God is hidden? The problem is that God is so close, so ordinary, so human, we fail to notice. Because if God comes in glory, well, we'll all kneel. But if God comes in flesh, we might just sit next to them and complain about the dryers. From God's fullness, we have all received, John tells us, grace upon grace. What a lovely line. From God's fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. Grace upon grace, by definition, does not arrive in complete packages. It piles up. It overflows. It shows up in places you don't plan to find it. Grace upon grace looks suspiciously like someone folding socks carefully because it matters to them, even though no one else is watching except that guy over there from Oregon. Which leads me to wonder about this. What if making God known in our world is not about explaining God, but about embodying God and becoming, dare we say, instruments of God's own peace? What if the Word becoming flesh, although climaxing in Jesus, doesn't end with Jesus? What if, to one degree or another, it keeps happening? What if God keeps slipping into the world in ordinary bodies, doing ordinary things, revealing divine life in moments we dismiss as insignificant? What if the problem isn't that God doesn't show up, but that God doesn't show up loudly enough for our tastes? We want God in big moments, and God keeps showing up in the small ones. We want God in certainty. God keeps showing up in vulnerability. We want God in the sanctuary. God keeps showing up wherever people are just trying to make it through the day. Like at a laundromat in the early hours of the morning with mismatched socks. The Word became flesh and lived among us, breathing, moving, folding laundry in the middle of our unfinished lives. So maybe the question John leaves us with isn't, do you believe all this? But rather, where have you been overlooking God? Because the light is still shining. The Word is still becoming flesh. And grace is still piling up right in front of us, whether we recognize it or not. And maybe, just maybe, the holiest moments of your life will not happen in moments you'd ever think to label holy, but rather while you're waiting or folding or laughing at something silly or sitting next to a stranger in a place that smells like detergent with a TV bolted to the wall above blue plastic chairs. And if that's true, then God, well, then God is closer than we ever imagined. Amen. Let's join together in a moment of silence.